Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcoming Michelle Bachmann.
Good morning. Good to see you. Good morning.
Who you are? She's here to mark.
We're so glad to have everybody here. Thank you all for coming. And we are so honored to have Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann with us today. And we know people are really concerned about the economy, and I think she's going to address those issues today. And we're concerned about what's going on in Washington and our country. And she's the one that can make it right. Anyway, here's Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, everyone, for coming out on this beautiful, bright, sunny, wonderful, God-kissed morning here in Iowa. It's a thrill to be back here with you. I was just in Washington, D.C. last night. We took a big vote on the debt ceiling. I don't know if any of you knew about that vote that we took last night, but it's a big one. I just have one question for you. How many of you want to see our government borrow we don't have so that the politicians in Washington can keep spending it? Is there a lot of appetite for that? You know, you join every other Iowan that I have talked to at the Jasper County Fair, at the Marion County Fair, everywhere I've been all across the state. I haven't been finding people who have much of an appetite to keep growing government. Does that shock you? Is that what you're hearing from other people as well? We are here this morning to have a conversation with each other. I'm going to say a few things, but this is really your time this morning to be able to weigh in and talk about this subject, because this is the number one issue that our country is facing right now. What are we going to do about the economy? Are we going to turn it around? Are we going to continue to see downward pressure on job creation? How many of you know someone who is unemployed right now? That's an astounding show of hands. How many of you know someone who is underemployed? In other words, they usually make a lot more money than what they're making right now. That's right. And how many of you know someone who is in college, a young person, whether it's high school or somebody who is in college or high school, who wanted to have a job this summer but couldn't find one? That is an even more amazing number. Oh, we're fine with little babies that squeal and wiggle. That don't worry. We're used to that. We like to have the little ones. But this is a big issue because especially for young people, summer jobs are when they learn those first skills, isn't it? I remember some of the summer jobs that you had. Do any of you remember your first summer jobs, what you did? Anyone a lifeguard? Yeah, we got lifeguards back there. You do that, the babysitting. I babysat. Anybody babysat over the summer? I did that. We babysat. There's a lot of things that kids do to get their job skills. But what's amazing is the high number of kids this summer that aren't working. Some statistics that I have read have said over 1 out of 4 kids this summer don't have a job, who want jobs. So what does that mean? That means they're not earning money, but they're also not getting the foundational skills to be able to get the jobs that they're going to need later on. Well, like I said, last night we had a big vote, and maybe you could help bring this up if you don't mind. Thank you so much for doing that. I wanted to give you just a couple of statistics. I hope you can see this, and I apologize to those of you who are back there. But we had a big vote last night. And the vote ultimately would have allowed our federal government to increase the debt ceiling if all of the conditions were met by another $2.4 trillion. That would just get us through 2012. So we're talking about not only all the money that we bring in anyway, but just overspending by that much more. Have any of you ever gotten into an overspending problem? You know, it can happen. What happens? usually you get into an argument with your spouse, don't you? That's usually the first thing that happens, because there's one that seems to want to spend more than the other, and I'm not going to ask you to identify yourself as to which one that is. But the one thing we know in Washington is that's exactly what's been happening. Well, we can't continue to keep spending more than what we bring in. I want to write a couple of numbers up here. Nancy Pelosi came in and took over as Speaker of the House in 2006 in that election. It was actually January when she came in and the gavel went into her hand. That's coincidentally the same day that I was sworn in to become a member of Congress. Let me tell you what our debt was, our official debt. That doesn't include the obligations that we have for Social Security and other retirement, other entitlements. This is what the debt was the day that I took office and when Speaker Pelosi took the gavel. It was, and if you, I don't know if you can see that, but it's over, it's $8.67 trillion. We were all terribly nervous about $8.67 trillion because that little baby right there has, yes, you turned around, sweetheart. That little baby has an obligation that she has to pay. And it's tens of thousands of dollars that have to be paid back to pay that debt. That's at $8.6 trillion. Well, when President Obama came in, this was in a very short time later, because that was he was elected in 08, so then that was 2 years later. It was $10.62 trillion. So if you think from the beginning of the country, when we first began, until the time that I took office, it was $8.6 trillion to get that much debt. So a little over 230 years. So in 2 years' time, we added almost $2 trillion more, or almost a quarter of what it took us 230 years to accumulate. That's a fast progression of spending. We've never spent as fast as we did from 2006, let me write the year, well, it's actually 2000, beginning in 2007 to beginning in 2009. That's pretty fast. This is where we're at today. Right now, we've overspent to the point of $14.3 trillion. Now, take a look at that. We went in 07 from owing 8.67. Now we've jumped up. This is where we are today, 14.3. That's amazing. This is what they voted on last night to allow. Let's put a plus sign here. Let's add $2.4 trillion. So now what they're going to have us at is $16.7 trillion. So now this is the figure that I want you to see. That would be to take us through 2012. So in just the time that I've been in Congress, from January 07 until next year, we will almost double what it took us over 230 years to accumulate in debt. Just think of that. That's in about 5 years' time, doubling the national debt. How can you do that? Because when you go and buy something, let's say you buy a beautiful home like this, or you buy a car, if you take out a loan, what do you have to pay in addition to the principal? That's right, you pay interest on the debt. And that interest adds up, doesn't it? That's what we're dealing with right now. The interest is growing on the debt, because when you borrow $8.67 trillion and you're paying interest, how many of you know that when you're down to $16.7 trillion in interest, you're paying probably double in interest what you were paying before? So all of us who get taxed and all of us who are earning paychecks, and we send that money into Washington, D.C., a big part of our paychecks that we send into Washington has to go to pay interest on the debt. Who are we borrowing from? We're borrowing from China. Who are we making rich with that interest on the debt? Countries like China. We're not benefiting from that. We're the person that we're borrowing from, the country that we're borrowing from, they're the ones that are benefiting from that debt. Let me also give you another statistic. Let's take this off and we'll flip this over. This year, we're taking in, think of what your family income is. This year, the federal government is going to take in $2.2 trillion. That's a lot of money. That's how much the politicians in Washington, D.C. have to work with. $2.2 trillion. This is how much they spent, $2.2 trillion, but they also spent an extra $1.5 trillion that they didn't have. And so that means that this year they spent $3.7 trillion. But the problem is they didn't have enough scratch, so they had to go out and borrow $1.5 trillion. They had 2.2, which is a lot of money, but that wasn't enough. They just kept on spending. I just have one question to ask you. Do you want to see Washington, D.C. cut back on spending, or do you want them to keep going at the velocity they're going? Do you want? Let's have a show of hands. How many want them to keep spending at these levels? Who wants them to cut back? You know what is astounding? Last night in Washington, D.C., they voted basically to continue the spending at close to the levels that we're spending now. There is some, quote, cutback, but not anywhere near enough to get us to where we need to be. Do you feel like Washington, D.C. is listening to you? Do you have that sense at all? I will tell you, the biggest blessing of running for the presidency of the United States is being with people like Jim and like Linda Fell here in Iowa, and to be with all of you and find out what you really think, because that's what I do. I'll be in a deli a little bit later today for lunch. I'll be talking to pastors a little bit later this morning. I continue to talk to one different group after another. Yesterday, I talked to a big Chamber of Commerce group down in South Carolina. Every day, I'm talking to people from every possible walk of life. As a matter of fact, I was in Indianola, Iowa. Who knows where Indianola, Iowa is? Isn't that a great town? We've got the senator that represents Indianola, Iowa, sitting right here, Kent Sorensen. And I was in Indianola, Iowa, and Kent was kind enough to be there with me. And I met everyone from the guy on the shop floor to the CEO down at a company called Cementec. Cementec is a great corporation in Indianola. And you know, recently they had over 200 employees. It started out a family-owned business, and it's now 100% employee-owned. Great company. They're the number one producer in the world of volumizer mixers. The economy in the construction industry has been poor. I think a lot of us know that. People just aren't doing a lot of building, whether it's commercial or whether it's residential. And so Cementec has seen their employees pare back from, over 200 to now down to about 100. And so when the employees, they're flying all over. So when the employees are, when people are let go, it is really family that's being let go. It's fellow employees that are being let go. This isn't some heartless move. It's done to somehow just try and keep that company afloat. And it breaks everyone's heart. But what's even more remarkable is that the Cementec volumizer mixers, the CEO told me the majority of these, you know, the cement trucks, when they turn around, they have the cement inside. He told me that the majority of these trucks are being sent overseas. They aren't even being built for the United States, because that's how little construction we have going on in this country. Well, I was there most of the day. It was over 90 degrees. It's probably 90 degrees here in the backyard, and I apologize for the heat, but I can't do anything about that. Sorry about that. But I was there all day. It was over 90 degrees in that factory. People were working really hard, and they're great people in the company. And at the very end of the day, one gentleman, I stood as the guys were leaving the line. They were punching the clock to leave. A guy was just dripping with sweat. He had dirt all over him. He'd worked really hard all day. He was carrying his lunch bucket. He hit the time clock, and he was leaving. And he came up to me, and he shook my hand, and he said, "Michelle, there's only one thing I'm going to ask of you." And he was dead serious. He said, "Would you please give this country back to the people?" And he wouldn't let go of my hand. And he said, and he asked me, he said to me three times, "Would you give this country back to the people? Because we can't keep going the way we're going." He said, "Look at me." He was about 70 years of age. He said, "Look at me. I'm at the end of my life. I'm a content, happy man. I have everything I need." Now, remember, he'd spent the entire day working in over 90-degree heat, covered with sweat and dirt, holding his lunch bucket. He wanted nothing for himself. He said, "This is about my 6-year-old grandson. That's who I care about." And I said, "What's his name?" He said, "He's Isaac." "That's who I worry about, because I'm shaking my head right now. Our guys are losing their jobs here on the line. I don't know what in the world Isaac is going to do." And it's not just a political slogan when we talk about jobs. This is real. It's real in Indianola. It's real this summer with youth unemployment. It's real because in 2006, we know that 61% of all private jobs that were created in small businesses. Small businesses with 50 or fewer employees are the miracle working engine of job creation. 61% of all jobs were created there in 06, that year when I came into Congress. That's where 61% of all jobs were created, small businesses. This year, you know what it's down to? 48% of all jobs are created in small businesses. On Monday, a terrifying report came out from the United States Chamber of Commerce. You know what it said? It said all the small business executives said, two-thirds of them said they have zero plans for creating jobs next year. Zero plans. Two-thirds of these small business people. And 12% said they were planning to cut jobs next year. Now think of that. In 06, two-thirds of all the jobs were created by the same guys who said next year they're not going to create any. What does that mean for little 6-year-old Isaac? What does that mean for that beautiful baby that was back here? What does that mean for you? What does that mean for your kids that are underemployed? What does that mean for Iowa? What does that mean for Des Moines? We have got to change the way we're doing things. I grew up in Iowa. I was born in Waterloo. I was born into a Democrat family. We were reasonable, fair-minded people. My parents and my grandparents would no more consider spending more money than what we take in. They would never have done that because we did what my mother said. She said, "Necessity is the mother of invention." She said, "Well, we'll just do without." She said, "We're just going to have to stretch." No, we didn't cry about it. We just did it. We just did what we had to do. I got babysitting jobs. My brother delivered the Waterloo Courier. I mean, you just did what you had to do. That's what Iowans do. We're happy people. We're happy. We're reasonable. We're fair-minded. We're not gripers, usually not most of the time. We're happy people. But something has happened that Washington, D.C. has forgotten to listen to you and you and you and you and you. They've forgotten to listen to you. And I saw that even yesterday. There was a very well-intentioned vote that was made. It was very well-intentioned. And I embraced the principles of what the vote was about. It was cutting spending. I agree with that. It's capping the amount of revenue that government takes away from all of you. And it's passing a balanced budget amendment. I agree with all of those principles. Only I add one more. And that's that we have to repeal Obamacare. We must repeal it. We must defund it. We have to do that because it will be extremely difficult for us to go forward with having this very expensive plan and regulation that's going to cost all of us trillions of dollars that we don't have. We know it's going to cost us trillions of dollars. Why, when the country is having difficulty meeting our obligations to senior citizens with Medicare, why would the President of the United States essentially steal over $500 billion? You heard me right. Why would he take over $500 billion out of Medicare when we have even more senior citizens going into that program, taking it out and giving it to younger people in Obamacare, and senior citizens are going to have to go begging? Why would you do that? Well, I was in the White House about 4 weeks ago. We asked the president, what's your plan to save Medicare, Mr. President? We didn't ask him just once. We asked him three times. We couldn't get an answer other than he mumbled something about Obamacare. Did you know that that's what the president's plan, I believe, will be? That Medicare will go away and we'll all be in Obamacare. Doesn't that sound like great news, America? Wasn't that wonderful news? We're all going to be in Obamacare. It'll be Medicaid for all. That's what it will be. And our futures will be decided by a politically appointed board of 15 people who decide what you're going to get and what you're not going to get. You think 15 people can figure out what over 300 million people should get? And so this board will say, well, gee, we only have enough money to pay, here's an example, for 10,000 hip replacements. Well, what if you're 10,001? Where do you go? There's no right of appeal. You can't sue these people. You have no recourse. You just say, tough luck, Charlie. You're out. This is not America. This is not what we're used to. I want a pro-growth America where we're turning the economy around, where we're adding jobs. Here's the good news. We don't have to stay bogged down in this miry decline of our economy. That's the good news. We can change this. The way that we do this is to have the federal government not take so much of our money, spend less money, and then what we have to do is lower the tax burden on the job creators in this country so that we can have job creation and then bring the regulatory burden down as well. We can do every bit of that. Well, we've been asking this question of people across America, and I've got responses. Oops, we've got responses from people from Facebook. And we've been asking them about what they think about raising the debt ceiling. I want to get to a couple of their responses, but then I really want to get to you. Let me tell you what I got from Facebook just last night from people. When I asked people across the country, tell me, what is it? What do you think about the debt ceiling? Should we raise it or should we lower it? Let me read you what Janie from Tennessee had to say. She said, my husband and I have had to live within our financial means for years now. What's so hard about that? If the working American public has to have a balanced budget to make ends meet, why can't Congress do the same? Let me read you Glenn from Tennessee. He said, we can't afford to go any deeper in debt. If we as taxpayers and families can cut our expenses to survive, so can the government. Let me read you just one more, and then we'll get to yours. This is Dave from Indiana. And he has a picture of his little granddaughter. He posted her picture up on our Facebook site. And Dave said, my one-year-old granddaughter was born with a $25,000 share of the federal debt. She never voted for it. She didn't ask for it. She has no choice. And with this vote that we took last night, her burden has just become a little bit heavier. Now, it won't. That particular vote is probably not going to go anywhere. The president said he was going to veto it. But nonetheless, what's the president's plan? What is his plan for turning the economy around? His plan is more spending. His plan is more borrowing. His plan is more taxing and adding to the debt ceiling. That is all we have seen. And that is not my plan for the economy. I plan to turn it around. And if we get our will around this, it won't take years. It will take one quarter, and we'll start to see the economy turn and recover. And rather than having 9.2% unemployment, we'll see hundreds of thousands of jobs added. Wouldn't that change Iowa? Wouldn't that be better for the people that live here? I love people. I love people and I care about people. That's what I want to see happen, is to make sure that people have better lives. Let's go ahead and get started. We have a microphone here. Let's get to your questions and your comments. And you can just talk if you want to. Tell me what you think about the debt ceiling. Tell me about what you want to see us do in Washington, D.C. And let's make sure we have water for everybody, too. I know it's very hot out here. So let's go ahead. Go ahead. Don't be bashful. I know Iowans aren't bashful. Go right ahead. Right here. We've got Linda. Linda Fell.
Well, I guess my question is about, we have a lot of underemployed, and I see kids getting out of college, and they're taking, you know, the minimum wage jobs because that's all there is. And even kids that have been out for a few years. Even, you know, we retired thinking there would be enough money to cover everything, and all of a sudden we've got the gas and the food and everything else going up. You know, it's not that we're not well off, but it's just all of a sudden everything we had that we were going to spend extra is not there. I mean, so we're not going to be able to support the businesses that would count on people like us. And so I guess my concern is, these people, how are we going to help them?
Well, that is the right question about the underemployed, the fact that people aren't taking jobs. And when people are losing jobs, if they came out of like middle management, they're finding that they're having to take jobs for $8 an hour and $9 an hour. And maybe they were making, you know, upwards of $75,000 a year. And all of a sudden the dynamics change and they're in their 50s. And what are they going to do? Or like yourselves, where you have retired and now the whole dice has changed, because we all saw our 401k plans just plummet as we've seen the dynamics in the economy change. Well, what we have to do quite simply is we have to recognize that it doesn't help to put more people on a government dependency. That's what President Obama has tried to do. I should have brought my chart with me today, just in the area of food stamps. And no one begrudges feeding a hungry person. No one begrudges that. But if you look at the number of people on food stamps, it's almost a straight line trajectory up, the number of people that have been going into dependency. We want independency, because that's true dignity for people, when they can have a job and one that pays for food for their family. There's things that we've got to do, for instance, on trade with China. China, we all know, is manipulating their currency. They aren't playing fair. There's illegal dumping that goes on into the United States. That needs to be over. And we need to have a commander-in-chief that stares down China and changes the dynamic on these trade agreements. We also are losing market share in countries that we're trading with. Iowa, for instance, you're a wonderful pork producer. We have fabulous ag products that come out of Iowa. Well, I went to Colombia. I met with President Santos. We talked about the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. Right now, the only people being penalized are Americans. Not Colombians, American farmers, American manufacturers are being penalized. We need to open up the Colombia markets, because you know what the Colombians are doing? They're not standing still. They're negotiating deals with China. They're negotiating deals with Argentina. So our market share that we owned in Colombia is going away. So we can have the finest pork producers in Iowa. But yet, if there's no one who can buy their things, what's going to happen? So if you don't have Iowa pork producers being able to sell their product, well, then how can they go into town and buy a new truck? How can they go and be a part of the economy? So you're asking the exact right question. And I think that's why it's unnerving for new retirees like yourself, because all the hopes and dreams that you had, you had a lifetime of work from both of you. You put your savings away. And this is another issue. The value of the dollar is declining precipitously. Under President Obama, there's reports that the dollar has declined 14%. So in his time in office, you hold that dollar up, shave off 14%, it's worth less. Are you better off today than you were when he took office? Absolutely no. By any measure, we're not. So we need to strengthen the dollar. We need a sound dollar, and I don't think that the way that the Federal Reserve has been handling the soundness of the money has worked for any of us. I think that we need a big change at the Federal Reserve, and we need to audit them immediately. So,
Michelle, the average Americans feel that we should not have this tremendous debt. But when the politicians get in Congress and what have you, they have all these interest groups and what have you, and they just keep spending and spending more money. Do we need an amendment to the Constitution or some type of law where we don't overspend?
Well, that was part of the vote yesterday that I agree with. Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina had what he called the cut, cap, and balance pledge. I signed that with a fourth item, which was also the repeal of Obamacare, because I just don't see how you turn this economy around unless you repeal Obamacare. I also added another provision on that pledge that said that by me agreeing to those principles, it doesn't mean that I also agree to increase the debt limit, because I don't. That's why I voted against the bill last night, because the principles were good of cutting, capping, and passing the balanced budget amendment. They didn't include defunding Obamacare, but the problem is they allowed for increasing the debt limit $2.4 trillion. And again, we don't know how long that'll get us through for sure. They're estimating January of 2013. But with the way that the economy is going, I doubt if that money will even get us that far, because revenues are declining into the Treasury. And so I think it could even be before then. Why would you do that? Why would you not only max out the credit card, but now you maxed out the MasterCard. Now you're going to take out a Visa card, max that out. Now you're going to take out a Discover card. Now, you know, pretty soon you run out of cards to max out. That's what we're doing. So I do think the balanced budget amendment is a great idea to handcuff their hands. In my home state of Minnesota now, where I live, we have a balanced budget requirement. Kent, I believe you have that here in Iowa, too. In fact, I think in Iowa, the legislators can only spend 99% of the revenues that they take in. And here's the good news. I want to pat the Iowa legislators on the back. Not only did they meet that requirement, they exceeded it. Because in what the Iowa legislators passed this year, they spent 95% of what came in. Shouldn't Washington, D.C. do what the Iowa legislators did? I think that's really good news. And I thank the legislators here in Iowa. They have some good common sense. And again, that's what I want to do. I have, I think, effectively taken the voice of the people I represent to the halls of Congress and demanded real, honest-to-goodness fiscal change. I want to take that same common sense voice that I learned growing up in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, Iowa. I want to take that voice to the White House, because that voice hasn't been heard in that White House for a very long time. So over here, we got a question. We got a microphone. Thank you. And I'm sorry for the heat.
Okay. 18 Republican presidents, all of them. Not a single balanced budget. When you're elected, you'll have four chances for a balanced budget. How many of those years will we have a balanced budget? And if not, how big will the deficits be?
I will submit balanced budgets. I can't control what the Congress will do, but I will guarantee you I will submit a balanced budget. But I will also tell you at the same time, it will require some very tough love. It will require sacrificial cuts. But we have to sacrifice now. The thing is that we all need to understand, the music is going to stop. When I was a little girl in Cedar Falls growing up, at the birthday parties, we played a game called Musical Chairs. Any of you remember that game? So you have one more child than you have chairs. And eventually the music stops and you have to find a chair and somebody loses their chair. Well, at the federal government level, the music is going to stop. Eventually, we can't earn enough money for what they can spend. They always spend more money than what we earn. Those days are over. I am committed to a new way and being a new sheriff in that town. And so what I am committed to doing is saying flat out, excuse me, and I believe in being very transparent when I'm running for office. Tell the truth. And that truth is, it's going to be tough love and sacrificial, but I will submit balanced budgets. And I will do everything I can to fight for that with the legislature. But if I am the nominee of the Republican Party, I'm also committed to finding and electing another 13 senators in the United States Senate. Also, I have something called a titanium spine. And I am about to go out as the nominee, and I am going to help elect and find 13 more U.S. senators that also have titanium spines who will stand with me, because I will guarantee you, you will hear wailing and gnashing of teeth and screaming and squealing all the way from Washington all the way to Iowa, because all of the special interests have been used to a lot of perks along the way. We can't afford it anymore. Promises were made, and some of those promises have to be kept, especially the ones to senior citizens. We have to keep those promises. And so in order to do that, we're going to have to cut back on all of the perks that we have for special interests. It's got to be done. So tough love.
Will you veto unbalanced budgets?
Well, I will work with them on it. I will do everything I can, and most likely I probably will. We'll see. I will submit it, and I will do the most important thing, which is to elect people. And I would say, look at my record. Look at what I have done. Look at my voting record. I think you can see quite clearly my time in Minnesota, my time in Washington, D.C. I have a rock-solid record as being a fiscal conservative and a real fiscal hawk. I've done it, and I have stood up to my own Republican leadership and a Republican president. I stood up against President Bush. I love President Bush. I voted for him twice. But I stood up to him on the $700 billion bailout behind closed doors. I stood up to Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary who President Bush sent over. I challenged him on that $700 billion. I said, look, we've already spent $29 billion to bail out Bear Stearns. We've already spent tens of billions to bail out AIG. I went through the whole litany. I said, what's your best evidence that this $700 billion blank check, something we've never done before, will get us out of economic trouble? He had no answer. It was just, trust me. I said, no dice. I don't trust you. You're not getting my vote. And so the vote failed. They didn't get enough votes. I worked like crazy for 2 weeks behind closed doors. The vote failed. Arms got twisted, and the $700 billion bailout passed. I think it was a mistake that bailout passed, because it was so outrageous. I think that allowed Obama then to have the $1 trillion stimulus, which was outrageous. We've seen one outrageous bill after another. Obamacare is outrageous. All of them are outrageous. But it opened the door. I have taken on a Republican president, my Republican leadership, because I put principle over party. I love my party. I'm proud to be a Republican, but I believe more in the principles of this country. And that's my allegiance, is to the Constitution of the United States. That's my allegiance before to a political party.
Michelle. I think we'll go ahead and kind of try to wrap things up. It's awful hot out here. But we just want to thank Michelle so much for coming.
Thanks, Jim.
And I hope everybody enjoyed this event.
Thank you.
Let's get out and go to the straw poll and support Michelle Bachmann, okay?
It's coming up soon. I need your help. I need everybody's help for the straw poll. So please bring all your friends, organize. We'll work with you. We'll get buses. We're going to dance. We're going to sing. We're going to eat. We're going to have a great time at the straw poll. So come out. We'll change the country. We'll take the country back in 2012, because I firmly believe that Barack Obama will be a one-term president. Thank you, Iowa. Make it happen here. Thank you, everyone.